Hey, it's Bill from Hunterwick, and this is the Nerd Stocking Podcast. This episode, we put the nearly unkillable Halloween franchise under the knife. We'll also look at times in media when we're rooting for the bad guy. And speaking of bad things, we're going to look at when killer cars have splashed blood all over the media windshield.
One of my favorite movies is Halloween. Mm-hmm. Halloween 1 and 2. I love them as one film.
Right.
And there's a movie that was remade in a completely different way. You know, it was rebooted.
Yep.
And then just, you know, a guy named Rob Zombie, who has like, you know, such a badass name, made such a shit movie. Right. And he removed all the badass from the movie. Right. And he's done other great movies like Devil's Rejects and House of a Thousand Corpses. They were great movies.
Yep.
I liked those a lot. But Halloween and what he did to it was like, he basically bent Michael Myers over a chair.
Right.
You know, it's like...
The one thing you don't do is unmask the monster. Otherwise, you have empathy for the monster.
Right. And that's something else. That's totally something else.
Yeah. So you have like this amazing character who is just pure evil. Like yep. All he wants to do is kill. He doesn't want money. He doesn't want to burn your house down. He just wants to fucking kill his family.
Yeah.
Like that's all the guy wants. Let the guy get what, you know, that's it. And he'll kill anybody in his way. Right. And that's, it's, he doesn't want possessions. He doesn't want life. He is just a killer.
It's and a killing machine.
It's so, you know, you just have to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And you're going to get a scalpel in your back, you know, like,
right.
And that's what makes him really scary. The right. randomness of it.
Right.
You know, even though he's looking right. only to kill his sister.
Right. But that's what they're dealing with. Right. Even, you know, think about it. Even back then, thinking, you know, mass shootings and killers in society, and they're commenting on it then, and just, you know, yesterday or the day before.
There was one story I heard earlier today that it was this guy went to, he killed three people at three different scenes
yep.
over the course of a day or two.
Yeah.
And he was an Uber driver.
Yeah.
And apparently he was picking up customers between killings.
Yeah.
Like a crazy fucking world we live in.
Yeah, funny, and also in that original Halloween, Michael Myers at some point seems really contemplative. This scene where he's got a guy up against the wall, he lifts him up so the guy's hanging, you see his feet, you know, the old shot. And then Michael Myers just drives a knife through him and he pins the guy to the wall. I think there's a door there and he pins him to the door. And then there's a wide shot, which is a little ridiculous because the body he lifted up doesn't look anything, isn't in the same position that he did when he skewered him. But then he's standing there and the guy's pinned to the wall. And then he kind of looks at it like he's looking at a picture that he's painted.
That's right. He likes it.
He's got pride in his work.
But in that scene where the one you just referred to, we weren't happy with that because where the knife goes, he would have fallen over.
Yeah, exactly. Right? That's what you always think. Like, just the body just would have ripped off or fallen through, right? But the whole movie is made in that sort of fairy tale, you know, supernatural quality that's the only way you can do it and forgive that stuff, be forgiven, right? And plus, a guy just got murdered, so you're not like really analyzing the scene because initially the audience is like, you're repulsed by it.
Later in one of the newer ones, he does that again, except now the knife goes through his collarbone.
Right.
So you know that the guy would be hanging there, right?
Right.
Because in that one, it's like, yeah, he would bend at the waist, right? Because he's like stabbed at the belly or something like that, right?
Yeah.
But slasher movies they're there for you to vent through, you know? Like, it's exciting and it's scary, but you're also sort of venting through them.
So you're thinking more, it's more like, I know I live in this townhouse and the fucking neighbor stereo's bumping, you know, all day. I just want to watch a film where a guy's fucking stabbing people.
Yeah, because I want him to be stabbed, yeah, you know?
But I can't do that.
Yeah, because we live in civilized society. Yeah. Michael Myers doesn't follow those rules.
Right.
But then Rob Zombie comes along, and while you think he's going to pay this homage to this great, the best slasher that ever made it to film,
right?
Instead, he strips him down and he... you know, like he does in all of his films, he's now a white trash family and, you know, in a trailer park or something.
Right.
And, now it's the stepdaddy was mean to him and the mother was a whore and the sister was this, and it was on and on and on it goes. And it's sort of like, it removes all the mystery
right.
of why he's so
you
evil.
Think I ain't making a mental list of all your fucking bullshit.
Sweetie, look at me.
I know things have been bad, but tomorrow we start to make everything better, okay?
How you feel about Rob Zombie's version of Halloween?
Next question.
The real interesting thing about the original Halloween is, like, it starts off, Michael Myers is a kid, and he lives in suburbia.
In a perfect little house.
Beautiful house. It's looking through the peepholes, and you get this look at this beautiful house, and, then just these beautiful people.
Bam.
And that's, you know, playing on the idea that no matter where you are, you can live in your little house, your beautiful little house, make, you know, make your great salary and have a house. And then things can change like that.
That's right. It's like, you know, oh, my neighbor, he was so quiet.
Right.
You know, he was, he lent me a shovel once, you know, the same shovel he buried the bodies with, you know, exactly. You know, and that's what's chilling about it. If you put him in a, you know, a bad environment,
right.
Well, we say, okay, well, you're raised in a bad environment. There's a chance you're going to be bad.
Right.
But it's scarier when there's a chance you're going to be bad when you're in a really nice place.
Right.
You know, and everybody feels that way, including the people who come from bad places.
Right.
Rob Zombie just made him this guy who had a really bad upbringing. And then he tried to turn him into the monster by the end, but it was sort of like, oh, poor Michael Myers.
Right.
You know, if I went through that, I'd want to kill teenagers too.
So he's trying to tell an epic story of how one man went wrong. But it doesn't, really,
it was just,
doesn't really work.
Well, and there was this whole movement of, I guess, with the idea of a reboot, saying, hey, we're out of ideas. We could just remake the movie, but it's some of these movies are great. So what say we strip them down? We do what Lucas did with the episode 1, 2, and 3, and let's go back to the beginning. How did Hannibal Lecter become a cannibal? How did Michael Myers become a slasher? And on and on. Right. And they're all terrible.
Because you unmask the monster, you now have empathy for the monster.
And now he's like you. You're trying to find the goodness in him. But when he's masked and he's horrible, it's like Darth Vader takes his helmet off when he dies. So that suddenly he's not the monster anymore.
Right. So that's at the end.
That's right.
You know, that's not at the beginning.
If he did it sooner, and this is why they can't be like Vader can't be in the next movie. He has to die and remove his helmet.
Right.
Because if he doesn't,
it's cheap. It's a cop out. You
know? Well, it's like not to talk about Star Wars all night, but in The Force Awakens, when Vin Diesel or whatever the Darth Vader Jr. there is, when he takes his helmet off. Adam Driver takes his helmet off. It's sort of like, oh, we're going to do that now, are we?
Right.
Yeah, so
that's true. That's true.
And suddenly we all thought he wasn't anywhere near as scary till the end of the movie.
Yeah.
He was no longer a menace. It's like, I haven't found the need to see the remake of RoboCop.
Right.
Because the first movie was perfect.
Right.
So why see another one?
Right.
To see everything that it's not?
I'd buy that for a dollar.
The budget on Halloween. This is a real indication of what somebody can really
do. Halloween, for a long time, I think until the Blair Witch Project, was the highest grossing independent film ever made.
Well, the Rob Zombie films each were made for $15 million, which is still pretty low in the big picture, right? Yeah. That's pretty low.
Yeah.
But the Halloween, the first one, what do you think it was made for?
I'm thinking like $200,000 or something like that.
Yeah, it's $325,000 that they made that movie, which is like unheard of in this
movie. Do you have how much it made?
I don't.
Yeah.
The
made a ton of money.
The sequel, Halloween 2, which is just the continuation of the night, cost $2.5 million.
Right.
Which I guess says that the second half of the night is way more expensive than the first half of the night, which is true.
Right.
Because that's when you get in trouble.
I think Halloween 2 is an abomination and a horrible movie. I was really disappointed in it.
Well, it's funny talking about remakes and Halloween is I remember going to the theater to see Halloween 3, The Season of the Witch. And I really enjoyed that film.
Well, you can enjoy it as long as you don't think that it's going to be tied in with the first two movies.
You know, it's funny. I don't know if I did or not. I remember reading that what they were going to do, what they're planning to do with the Halloween franchise was do just that, is make films that were like one-offs. Like, they weren't going to deal with Michael Myers anymore. It's almost going to be like an anthology horror series of films where it would be just scenarios. Like, maybe The Twilight Zone blown up into like feature length.
So Halloween grossed
So made for $300,000.
Made for $325,000 worldwide. Are we going to go domestic or worldwide? Domestic was $47 million.
Right.
And worldwide was $70 million.
Wow.
Yeah. And just in perspective, like Halloween 2 only made $25 million internationally.
That's funny.
But it was made for $2.5 million. Third one was made for $2.5 million, made $14 million. The fourth was made for $5 million, made $16 million. Like, these are shit numbers. Yeah. Like, really.
You're getting diminishing returns there on your Halloween franchise.
Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers, was number six.
How much did that space one make where it's he's in space?
That's Jason.
Oh,
that's Jason,
you're right.
10.
Sorry.
I'm Jason X.
Friday the 13th. I'm getting them mixed up.
Yeah. This is the good franchise we're talking about, not the bad franchise.
Right.
H2O, which was the return of Jamie Lee Curtis.
Right.
That one was made for $17 million and made $55
million. There you go. You're back on track with that one.
Getting a little bit more money. Halloween Resurrection, $15 million, made $37 million. And then the Rob Zombie films, each made for $15 million. The first one made $77 million, $7 million more than the original.
Right.
For
not, but that, well... Was way,
or
made for
30
way,
times the budget.
It's funny. It was made for way more, but if you were to like adjust for inflation or whatever, it's maybe similar.
But
it's in the ballpark, I guess.
No, because they made the same amount of money, but one cost $325,000, right, and one cost $15
million. But yeah, some good killing in those new movies. And like, and there's some scenes where it's very, like right out of like Nightmare on Elm Street, where the townspeople have surrounded him, right?
Yeah.
Frankenstein. They surrounded him, and they finally had it, led by Anthony Michael Hall.
Yep.
In the Halloween Kills, it's called. And they're around him, and they're gonna lynch him, right?
Yeah.
And they start hammering him, hitting him with baseball bats, and shooting him, and doing everything, right? And you think that's it, but no. And it's just like, holy fuck! He comes back, and you're like, oh my god! It's so well done. It was a scene that is like when Vader moves fast in Rogue One,
right,
with his lightsaber. And you're like, that's how he should be moving. He shouldn't be moving around like he can't see out of his helmet.
Right. Hey, Chad.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey, it's time to root for the bad guys as we look at movies and TV characters we hate to love.
Yeah, you know, like, bad guys are more fun because they're more complex. There's more layers.
I always think of Gary Oldman because he plays a lot of bad guys really well. And whenever he's interviewed, they always ask him, do you like playing the bad guy? And he always says yes, because they say it's more fun. You know, it's like the bad guy is he's not beholden to any set rules that you would expect a good guy to behave a certain way, but a bad guy is almost like a kind of roll the dice in the plot where it's unpredictable.
You know, I think that there's not a lot for the good guy. Like, if you're going to play roles, like I know that Dwayne Johnson, when he was going to do Black Adam, right, yep, he was originally asked to be Shazam, and he right, was like, yeah. And maybe because he's just tired of doing that role, you know, I'm always the good guy.
Right.
And he decided he wanted to mix it up a little bit because there's a more interesting story. But my son, he loves the bad guys. And so I'm always trying to like figure out things to get him. And it's always bad guy related. He, you know, he was never interested in the Jedis. He just didn't want the good guys. He was all stormtroopers. He has like, I swear he has 36 stormtroopers on a shelf and nothing in there that it was a good guy. You know, Vader's the man. He's just the guy doing his job.
That's what I always thought. Vader is really just upper management person who's just really trying to get shit done. You know, yeah, like he's surrounded by all these technocrats that are like all beholden to their tech. But you know, he has a simpler outlook. He's just a spiritual guy that you know, has faith and in the ways of the Force, right?
Yeah. Well, he just at one point decided, you know, people are stupid and right, they need a little guidance.
Right.
So we're not throwing them in jail mostly, and yeah, we're not killing them.
mostly, but we're going to create order in the galaxy.
Yeah, that's right. That's what the Empire is really all about. That's what they keep saying, is that they want to bring order.
Well, and I think that a lot of people, you know, in our world often follow that, you know, they trade off morality and ethics because they think, well, the bad guy often will make things better for us and we'll tolerate it a little bit and ultimately will be the better choice. You know, look, how many people drive Volkswagens? How many people drive BMWs? They have a very colorful past.
Yeah.
Volkswagen was, you know,
Hitler pretty much designed it on a napkin or something.
Yeah. It's his brainchild, but look how many right. people drive Jettas, right?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah. Or even like, when you go up an elevator, it's made by the Otis Corporation. Those are the guys that made the showers for the fucking concentration camps. Right. Yeah. And IBM helped make marching Jews into the ovens efficient.
Yeah, right. Mercedes, that logo is a fan, and that they made fans. It was a propeller, but they made fans for the gas chambers.
Right.
BMW made the jets that are the bombers that attacked Europe.
That would spin us off in a whole other topic of whether capitalism.
But people like to trade. Well, you know, and then there's Trump. It's like, look at the people that support that guy. Yeah. It's like, because they think his badness is strong.
Right.
Right. And it's no, he's just a jackass.
Yeah. It just doesn't take any opinions. Right.
And so Star Wars doesn't show that Vader, you know, they don't show the people who support him. And often, like, you know, they're not altruistic. Sometimes they are, like the Thanos kind of model where he believes he has a mission.
That was that's a great example too. Right. Like, he's sure he's going to wipe out half of everybody in the universe, but, he seems to have good motivations, right? Like he knows resources are finite. So unfortunately he decides not to double the resources, but he halves the consumers of those resources, which I think is a little questionable.
Well, I also I don't agree with his randomness, right? Like if you really have if you really believe in something.
Yeah.
Okay. I really believe in something. I have the Thanos glove. Okay. I have the Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah.
I'm going to pick off the people that deserve to go.
Right.
Well, I'm not going to just work through. I'm going to try to create what I think is the perfect world.
Right. Well, yeah, just follow the words of the bard. And first you kill all the lawyers. Right. Not half of them. All of them.
My son, besides Stormtroopers, right now he's watching Breaking Bad. So he's like, he's wrapping up. He just finished the fourth season of Breaking Bad. He's just going crazy.
Yeah.
And who's his favorite in season four? Gus. Gus is like, which is like the bad guy that Walter White and Jesse Pinkman, you know, have to do business with.
Or even Walter White and Jesse, you know, they're fucking making meth, right? Yeah. That shit gets into people's hands, kids' hands, right? It's ruining lives. But, you know, you still sympathize with him. You know, he's just a science teacher that's got cancer and he's trying to pay for his treatment.
He's trying to help his family. He's trying to leave his legacy.
Yeah, exactly. And he's by making meth.
That's right.
Blue meth. Good old Heisenberg.
You know, and this is like, it's that world of gangsters, right? Like I stopped watching gangster movies because gangsters are, you know, we glamorize them. They're criminals. They're killers.
Yeah.
You know, they're portrayed as, oh, it's all about family. And I have a family, but we don't, you know, we don't have people killed and we don't have, you know,
well, at least you don't admit it.
Well, not officially.
Not to be let into
the film. But it's sort of like I stopped watching gangster movies because gangster movies, they suck you in and you're like, oh, you feel all full, right? Yeah. And raring to go, because somehow those movies, they make you feel like a tough guy while you're watching them, which is why like movies like Scarface are on the wall of every rapper's, you know, crib. Like in Game of Thrones, Cersei was just, she was so evil.
She's, you know, a mother evilly protecting her son, who himself is evil. Right. Whatever the guy that was poisoned.
Joffrey,
who would shoot crossbows at whores.
Yeah.
And he dressed and looked like a young David Bowie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, David Bowie meets Malfoy.
Like David Bowie's Love Until Tuesday, right? It's like, yeah, I love you till I kill you with a crossbow. He's a bad guy that I didn't like, though.
Just rooting for his death.
You know, but because he's also, in spite of the fact that he looks cool like Bowie, he was kind of like Hayden Christensen, Anakin Skywalker, right? So he's just kind of aggravating all the way through.
Yeah. The thing is, that's just interesting. It's an interesting dichotomy because he's annoying because he's doing such bad things and he's just an asshole, right? Yeah. Hayden Christensen is supposed to be like, you know, so good, and then he turns. But the guy, Hayden Christensen, he just couldn't pull that off. That's a fucking, you got to walk a line. It's a huge arc, like an amazing character arc. And he couldn't sell it. And then he has no backup from Lucas as a writer, just writing shit.
Well, and you know, the truth is that he went bad for lame reasons, right? Mm. Like he just kind of just, it was so reactionary, like, no.
Yeah, someone just tells him something. Out. Someone just tells him something and he just fucking buys it.
That's right.
He wants to be on the Jedi Council. Like, I mean, he might be a moron like all those other Jedis. I guess he might have fit in, but so stupid. Quit bringing up the prequels. I'll stop bringing up Ready Player One and you stop bringing up the fucking prequels, all right?
Don't pick a fight, Bill.
That's not good. I thought you were a good guy, Chad, and a bad guy. One thing I wanted to talk about when it comes to bad guys, and we were talking about, you know, we always use Rob Zombie as a whipping boy because he redid the Halloween and decided to explain why Mike Myers was such a scumbag.
Oh, behave. Yeah. Yeah, baby. Yeah.
Such a murderer.
Poor Michael Myers.
But one movie recently that kind of did that and worked was The Joker. The sort of non-canonical telling of the Joker story from Batman. And what they did was, you know, they totally built the whole thing around the Joker, where he's got the reason why he's, you know, evil and, you know, laughing at evil is it's an actual medical condition that he has, mm-hmm. where he laughs crazily at the most inopportune situations.
Yeah,
and like everyone does. Yeah, exactly. Kind of like Tourette's, and everyone doesn't understand it. And he's just made a pariah. Right. And, you know, and that, you know, talking about Hayden Christensen as sort of an actor that can't rise up to the occasion, Joaquin Phoenix he totally sells that. It could be so annoying and like, oh yeah, you need to explain why the Joker is the Joker. Again, he should just be a random element on the field. But what they did in The Joker was amazing. Like, just totally explain it in a way where you sympathize with him. It's a bad guy you're loving to hate because they explain it so well, what's wrong with him.
So in comic books, they often say, if you have a superhero, it's going to be natural that a supervillain will arrive.
Right.
Right. Because you just always need that balance. And it seems that the Joker does things not for self-gain. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't rob a bank so he has money.
Right.
He might rob a bank so he has money so he can do something so that he can somehow connect with Batman. Because he's always kind of, you know, he wants a friend.
What's that great scene, the interrogation scene in The Dark Knight or whatever?
Yeah.
Where Batman's got him in the interrogation room and he's like, why do you want to kill me? Joker's like, I don't want to kill you. What would I do without you? You complete me, right? It's like an amazing scene because it shows just exactly what you're talking about. You know, they need each other. I wanted to also point out that when it comes to making shows, TV shows and movies around distasteful characters, there's no better champions than the British. Which might say something.
They are awful.
Might say something about the British mentality, as they make so many distasteful people that become hugely popular characters. Like I always think of, you know, in my opinion, maybe the best British television show ever made is Fawlty Towers, right? All built around John Cleese's character of Basil Fawlty running Torquay hotel, and he's just the fucking worst guy. He just he's horrible to the guests. He does a lot of stupid things. He's super conceited. You know, the stupid things he does, he thinks he's you know, the smartest guy in the room. But he's dumb. But John Cleese is just, you know, all in Monty Python were like that. They'd make characters of authority and then they'd just deconstruct them. Mm-hmm. But Fawlty Towers, man, that's a classic. Just you just despise Fawlty. But then you sort of sympathize with him, too, because he's got kind of a shrewish wife and he's got this incompetent helper with Manuel. He's surrounded by people, that he can hate. And then you agree with him. But then again, he's a character that's just not nice.
I watched The Office. I'm a big fan of The Office.
Right, right.
I had watched the British one first. And then I started to watch the American, couldn't do it because it was just so cheesy and cornball. But I left a couple of years and then I crazily just binge watched the whole series. But, you know, that lead, the Steve Carell character and the Ricky Gervais character, which David Brent, I guess, is the Gervais name.
That's
and
right.
Michael
Scott
in the American one.
Yeah.
And they're just so horrible.
Like, yeah.
You know, Steve Carell is he's so likable and so hateable at the same time. And I don't know if sometimes he's saying the things you think,
yeah,
and it makes him relatable because he has no filter. But I find that it's like it's just so cringeworthy all the way through. And maybe this is something, like you say, like the British are good at this because they recognize that there's complexity in darkness and in humor,
mm-hmm,
you know, and they've managed to do something. Whereas the American market is just like, here's funny. And they just throw it at you, right?
Yeah, they're so convinced that it's funny, right?
Yeah.
Which is kind of the death of comedy. Another interesting show that translated was they had a show in Britain called Till Death Us Do Part. Mm. And it was about this guy, this character, Alf Garnett, who's just the head of this household. And he's a bigot and a racist and an anti-Semite. And then they translated that in America to All in the Family. And Alf Garnett is the blueprint for Archie Bunker.
Right.
But then, you know, and in the realm of American television, All in the Family, the show they built him around, you know, at its time was very controversial, right? Because Archie Bunker was sort of saying the same things, only he wouldn't use the direct language when he's talking about black people. He'd say those people, right? And even that is like, you know, a terribly racist thing. But it didn't have quite the cutting, you know, directness of the original character. But, you know, Archie Bunker became, and All in the Family became a huge hit. And all around a guy who was super unlikable. And the funny thing is, you know, and in Britain this happened too with Alf Garnett was, you know, he was made as a satire to show how stupid people are who have these views, and then they're venerated by the conservatives and right wing. They agree with what they're saying, you know. So it's undercuts what the producers are trying to do, which is make fun of it. It's actually revered by some people. And, you know, I used to think, oh, we're past that, but just in the last 5 years, you know, it's all come back again.
So the last guy that I would refer to is Dexter, because Dexter is a homicidal maniac who kills people terribly, chops their bodies up and disposes of them.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the hero of the show. He's the protagonist. We follow him. We don't want him to get caught. He's a nice guy. We want him, mm-hmm, to be happy. We want him to have a nice relationship. It's okay that he, you know, he kills all these people because his adopted father recognized in him that he was a psychopath. So they decided, well, let's embrace that. And we're going to teach you have that a code that you will kill only bad people.
Yeah. They did a great job, cutting between Dexter and what he's doing and how he came to be again, often the death of a character trying to explain it. But, you know, he was a psychopath as a child, and his father could see that he really doesn't have any empathy for living things.
Mm-hmm.
And just as best as a father can do of a obvious functioning psychopath, is just, you have to teach your kid who, you know, when to take a life and when not. Like, you might not value the life, but you have to value
your process of how you figure this out, and you have to figure out the right way. So what's going on right now is they're having the Black Adam movie, and he's like the bad version of Captain Marvel.
Yeah, well, kind of like DC does this. Like they had in Green Lantern, you have like the Red Lantern guy, mm-hmm. you know,
the red light.
Yeah,
you don't have to turn on the red light. And
he has a ring that has a because the Green Lantern, his weakness is yellow, color yellow, right?
So when he pees, he just faints.
That's right. It's like, ooh, I should have looked at the toilet.
But, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, so then and I can't remember his name, the guy at the Widow's Peak. You know, he has a ring that has the yellow light. So
Sinister or something.
Sinestro. It's Sinestro. Right. So Black Adam is kind of the counterpart, except, yep. you know, this is a perfect example of you know, DC trying something different.
Dwayne Johnson's gonna play him as kind of an anti-hero.
Yeah, well, the character is kind of an anti-hero because he just feels that he was done wrong. But much like Thanos, with these powers, he believes he should rule the world for the betterment, right?
Right.
So he has an idea of what's good, but he's willing to make the decisions for all the stupid people out there. But yeah, Black Adam I think it'll be entertaining. It's Dwayne Johnson wants to flex a little darkness for a change, and he's good with a little bit of aggression. Like, I don't know if you ever watched Ballers, but
he was a heel on the WWF for quite a while. So
yeah,
so
the World Wildlife Federation.
Yeah, he was like murdering hippos.
He's fighting pandas.
WWE, I guess they call it. I'm an old school. It's no E. It's F.
It's an F.
Fuck you, ducks.
Yeah, it'll be all right.
Yeah, we'll see. They got to walk a line. We'll see if they, as usual, they renege on the darkness part, right? They're like, this is the thing, you know, how to do it really well is you've got to commit to the darkness before you show the light. And they don't, you know, they've come to the idea that no audience is going to sympathize, even though we're surrounded by shit times, we're doing shit things ourselves to try to survive in this crazy collapsing society. But they, I guess maybe they're reacting to that and saying, oh, everything, we have to show everything good. There can't be any gray area because everyone's just so sick of the gray area that we live in. So we'll have to see if they waffle on that part of the character, if they don't make them quite that dark.
Just remember, a bad guy is just a good guy who's not doing good things.
So Chad, you want to talk about wheels?
Wheels.
Haunted wheels.
That's right. It's not enough that they're fast, speedy, but they're haunted.
And they could still run you over, but a possessed car is just run you over.
On purpose.
On purpose. Lends a little bit more oomph to the wheels crushing your bones under the tires.
Are we going to just go through every car that it's ever been?
No. I'm picking four. Because we got to keep these down to a reasonable level. I should have tried to find six because, you know, 666.
Yeah, well, maybe we have 666, but that'll be on the car episode.
I have to be careful. It's not necessarily cars we're talking about because the first movie I wanted to talk about is actually Duel, which has a truck that's the main villain. And it's kind of interesting because, it's not necessarily possessed. The movie kind of alludes that there is a driver, right? I don't know if you've ever noticed that. It really kind of makes it seem like there is a guy behind the wheel that's like terrorizing poor Dennis Weaver, who's like just trying to get to a client on the road. He aggressively passes this old tanker truck,
right?
And the tanker truck subsequently just terrorizes him.
And then you find out there's nobody in the driver's seat.
I guess, like I say, you don't really see the driver. I think there's a couple of shots where there's like briefly you see somebody. It was actually Steven Spielberg's first stint at long form filmmaking, but it wasn't a feature. It was a TV movie because, of course, he got started in TV for Universal. He did Columbo and Night Gallery and a bunch of TV shows before he Went off and did Sugarland Express, I think was his first like motion picture. Mm. And then of course he did Jaws, which is funny because this movie really is kind of a setup for Jaws because it's a, instead of a shark, it's a land shark. I guess you'd say it's like a Candygram. Truck. It's a truck on the, it's a truck on the road. That's terrorizing somebody, but you can see it's a buildup for Jaws, but windows are super tinted. So you don't see, anybody behind the wheel, but the truck itself is scary enough. It was a 1955 Peterbilt 281 that played that role. And I guess Spielberg chose it because it had kind of a scary face, you know, big headlights and a big scary grill.
Like a character actor.
Another thing I like about Duel is it's just in the perfect 70s mold where you don't have to explain what's going on. Like you're wondering, is there a driver? Is not a driver? It's not really explained, but that's what I love about these movies, especially I think the 70s was a perfect era that where like Halloween, where you don't need a fucking explanation. Something horrible and inexplicable is going on. And then you just deal with it on that level. And then it ends maybe ambiguously, which, and I like that, right? No need to fucking explain anything. I'm looking at you, Rob Zombie's Halloween.
Yeah, fuck you. Right? You know, I think that it's true. I think that, you know, and in the 70s was a great era of we're just going to freak you out. We're not going to have to wrap it up. We don't have to clean it up. Like When a Stranger Calls, they tried to do that.
Why haven't you checked the children?
They took what should have just been a small movie that was great and they added all this stuff. And but I think that so many times they just said, yeah, doesn't matter. Are you freaked out? Was it spooky? We win. We solve the problem.
If they do a remake nowadays, it would be like you'd see the driver and his wife would have left him and he's really, you know, he's upset. And then he goes on the road and Dennis Weaver cuts him off and he flips, right? He cracks.
And you'd be like, that Dennis Weaver is the antagonist of this story.
That McCloud.
Get him.
He put me in jail. I'm going to run him down. Instead of a horse, he's on a car. I can't fool me though, McCloud. And then he runs him down. Which
I remember my mother took me to the drive-in and we saw three movies. There was Jaws followed by The Car. Then the last one was Survive, which was about the soccer team that eats themselves after a plane crash.
So you know, these are movies to take your
kids.
I
was like
to.
5 or 6. Of course I was mature enough for that. I just remember my mother holding up her cardigan between the seats. Like, don't look at this part while they eat each other, you know. But the Jaws kept me out of the lake and really fearful of even the bathtub, really. The Car was a weird kind of freak out because roads are everywhere. Like, you can not go in the lake, but it's hard to stay away from roads. So, and you know, that big black Lincoln in the car was terrifying, especially since it was possessed by the devil.
That's right. There was no inexplicableness in that regard for the car. It was obviously possessed and there was no driver. And I think there's a couple of scenes where the doors open up and there's nobody inside.
Yeah. I think there's one scene where you can see somebody driving it because, of course, there's a stunt driver driving
right.
it. But they had really good blacked out windows.
Yep.
And at one point, it can't go, like, spoiler, in case anybody hasn't seen it since 1977.
Yeah.
But, you know, the person the car is hunting escapes by, I think they go into a graveyard.
Right.
And it can't go on hallowed ground.
Right, right.
It's right. a fucking car.
Yeah, but it's possessed.
It's possessed. Why would something possess a car?
Just as a kind of a synopsis for people that might not have seen it, is James Brolin is in it. He's the father of Thanos. I mean, Josh Brolin. And he's a cop in this kind of, in this desert town where this big giant 1971 Lincoln Continental Mark III is terrorizing people for no reason. You know, well, this is even like Freddy Krueger where, you know, all the people in the town, you know, burned him up because he's like kitty diddling or something. Isn't that the plot for Freddy Krueger?
Right. He did some questionable thing with the kids in the boiler room.
Well, there isn't even that or like.
Well, how do you know? Maybe the Lincoln was diddling, you know, he was a diddler. Well, you know, when I think of possessed cars, I think of movies like Knight Rider.
Really?
And Kit. You know, is it a program?
Possessed.
Is it AI? I don't know. I think it's
that's interesting.
A mechanic has come back from the dead. Hi, Michael.
Hello, Michael.
Let's go kill some people, Michael. Herbie the Love Bug. Possessed. Possessed. Why else is it alive?
That kind of leads us into the next movie I want to talk about, which is, of course, Christine. The movie about this nerdy guy called Arnie Cunningham who buys and refurbishes a rusted out old 1957 Plymouth Fury. And as he refurbishes it and drives it around, drives her around, it slowly kind of takes possession of him. And then it starts murdering people that, you know, get between them. It's interesting to me, Christine, because it seems to be a more kind of introspective look at the idea of a haunted car. Because sure, it's a car that rolled off the assembly line at Detroit, possessed. Again, they don't give a whole lot of explanation about what happened, but the movie itself is kind of taking the idea of the automobile and America's love affair with it and the idea of just paving everything for the interstate. It's the idea of it's corrupting Arnie, but then this idea of how the car is kind of corrupting America.
73 to 83 is really an era. Hitchhiking was now scary. Roads were developing all over the place. It was the building of North America. Right.
There's fluorocarbons getting into the air and the ozone layer and all that stuff.
Everything was turning bad. But one of the things was that hitchhiking was the roads were a terrifying place now because they were rampant, even though there was probably killers killing teenagers who hitchhiked earlier.
Right.
But the 70s, there was a rash of it. That's what Chips episodes were about. You know, so I think that demonizing the car was a great next step. Why not?
You know, segueing into Stephen King again, I wanted to talk about, you know, his magnum opus, the one movie that he's ever directed, and that's Maximum Overdrive, classic of cinema. And Maximum Overdrive is based on Stephen King's short story Trucks, which appears in I think it's Night Shift. I like watching Maximum Overdrive, but it's, you know, a guilty pleasure, right? I definitely wouldn't recommend anybody else to see it, but the one thing I remember about it, I think everybody remembers about it, is the truck that's the main truck is this 1981 white Western Star 4800. It's like a toy truck hauling toys. It's got this great big evil looking green goblin face on it. Everybody, I think, remembers that visual part of the movie. That, and then a kid gets run over by a steamroller.
Nice.
And it leaves a big smear on the wheel as it goes around. And I think another guy is murdered by, I guess it's not only trucks, but other inanimate objects. But you wonder, the cars are not affected. The cars don't come to life. But there's another, in that same scene where the kid gets run over by a steamroller. It's at a baseball game, a little league baseball game. And the one guy's getting a Coke and he puts his money in and he looks in the slot. He can't, he doesn't get it. And then the Coke comes out at about the speed of sound and like gets him right in the forehead, kills him.
No episode of Cars would be complete without My Mother, the Car.
Right. You know,
and in an era in the mid 60s of talking horses and, you know, they had My Mother, the Car, which was like a crazy premise, right? This guy, his mother dies. What's it come and starts, you know, with a happier notion. Right. And it's like a Disney film. The parents always die right at the beginning of the film. To set
everything. That's true. That's true.
So you have his mother's dies and comes back as a, it's a 1928.
Isn't it a Porter?
Porter. So he goes to the dealership and for some reason he's drawn, again, it's that possession thing. He's drawn to this 1928 Porter and he buys it. He's a lawyer. And he finds out that his mother's spirit is in this old dilapidated car. So in the mid 60s, all these cool cars. Yeah, it's crazy. And now he's driving this crap box from 1928. Yeah. And she only talks to him through the radio. And the radio would flicker, like light up and flicker every time.
Just like a Knight Rider.
Yeah, exactly. And she'd be like, oh, son, no. And she'd give him all this advice for his legal things.
It's Did he ever take a date in the ride for a car. That would be awkward. It's
like screwing in the back seat with your mom saying,
"Get the drive-in.
You want some advice, son?
Pull out." It's one of the Van Dyke brothers.
Jerry Van Dyke.
Jerry Van Dyke. That's right.
Coach.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, Chad, I think that probably does it for our peek under the hood of some spooky wheels. And I'm going to ask everybody to please mash on that subscribe button like you're using your horn in rush hour traffic. And I'll tell you that you can gas up our podcast by donating to our Ko-Fi page, which is linked in the description. Keep on trucking.
Knows in the second life we all come back sooner or later, as anything from a pussycat to a man-eating alligator. Although you all may think my story is more fiction than it's fact, but believe it or not, my mother did decided she'd come back as a car. She's my very own guiding star, a 1928 Porter. That's my mother, dear. She helps me through everything I do, and I'm so glad she's here. My mother, the car.